opening script. So here's the meeting format. It's an open meeting of Al-Anon where the topic is the slogans, and we have two or three panelists, depending on how the day goes, who will share their experience, strength, and hope from here. And we will hear each of them and then open the floor for shares. So please try to keep the meeting conversation focused on Al-Anon. And that is the feelings and situations that come up from someone else's drinking or addiction. So Jane and Sarah are our two current speakers. And each of them will qualify briefly, and then we will open it to the room. And Emily, would you like to wave to the people out there? She's going to be our timekeeper. So we'd like our speakers to speak for 10 or 15 minutes, and then 3 minutes for anybody from the floor, and Emily will keep us on target. Okay. So Sarah, would you like to go first? I'll try with you.
All right. Greetings, everyone. My name is Sarah, and I am a grateful member of Al-Anon. I'm happily married to an alcoholic. That's the other part of my what I frequently say when I introduce myself. I am powerless over people, situations, places, and things, and my life is unmanageable. One of the blessings of AA is that you bring your humility with you the first words out of your mouth, and I think that is something that Al-Anon can certainly use. I was born into this room. I was born qualifying to this program. My grandfather was an alcoholic. My father is the adult child of an alcoholic in a wildly untreated Al-Anon. He is centered around himself and has a lot of stuff with control. It's how he was able to survive the family disease of alcoholism when he was growing up. It's the tools that he knows and has. My mother is a passionate woman and at least a heavy drinker, if not an alcoholic. I'm befuddled by the ways that she actually manages to control her drinking, so that's why there's some ambiguity there. There is no ambiguity, however, with my husband, who is a passionate, raving, delighted, devoted alcoholic. We've been together for 23 years. We met in high school. It was at a football game, no less. He had been drinking since before he had met me. He was he's brilliant, passionate, life of the party. Sounds familiar, I know. And right before we got married, right after we got engaged, the wheels were coming off the wagon. It was very clear that this was unsustainable. You know, him sitting down on the couch and a plate of food slopping down his front as he fell down, kind of slumped into his chair. He finally did actually pee in the closet. You know, all of that fun stuff. And we were engaged. We were going to get married. It was a whole thing. And I didn't want that life. Oh, my goodness. Boy, howdy. I was not having it. Luckily gotten into therapy. I'd been in therapy before, and I said, you know what, maybe we should try this thing. And so we did. And about two sessions in, the therapist is like, maybe you, sir, need to try a little, unfortunately not program, but he started with therapy. He got sober on his own at the age of 25. Let me correct that. He stopped drinking alcohol on his own at the age of 25. Any Al-Anon who says, just take the bottle away, make him stop drinking, it'll fix it. I am here to tell you that is not the case. I am living proof. Our life is living proof. 9 years of white knuckling without a program of any kind, himself an Al-Anonic, and me an untreated Al-Anonic, and just about anyone would have done about anything they could to fix what our marriage had become and our lives had become individually. It was a hellscape. Delightful. Just so much fun. And so alcohol has never been my husband's problem. It's his solution. It's the thing that helps him in times of crisis and deep powerlessness. He just dives into it. And he did. So he relapsed in 2019. And it has been one of the greatest blessings of our lives individually and our marriage. And He's very efficient. He's very brilliant. And I like to say that he did a lifetime's worth of drinking in the like 10 years he had before he got dry at the age of 25. And so you can imagine what those 10 months of drinking were with his relapse. It was the last 5 years of an alcoholic death, almost. He describes himself as seeing himself die over those last few months. But the lucky thing is that there was one day he broke. And he said, I can't do this anymore. And we had an amazing couples counselor who had said, mentioned this thing before. And he had this phone number. And my husband called the phone number. I looked at him and said, you're not calling tomorrow. You're doing it today. And he called the number. And a guy picked up the phone. And he said, you know, we're meeting tonight, actually, on Zoom. Because, of course, this is July 2020. Oh, no, that was May 2020. And lo and behold, he turned on Zoom in his drunken state, you know, video off, the whole nine yards. And after this 1 hour where I was locked in the TV room going, oh my goodness, what's happening? He was sitting in the corner of a dark, darkened dining room going, I didn't know. I didn't know there were people like me. And that changed our lives. He went into detox in July. I found Al-Anon at the same time. He has 2 whole days more recovery than I do, and he will not let me forget it. And it was an incredible, incredible blessing. I somehow, by the grace, mercy, and amusement of God, do not have the allergy to alcohol. I do not have the craving. I had a wine tasting at my work and had, you know, like 3 glasses of wine, and then the next day, nothing. I could leave half a glass of wine on the table. I don't know how. My husband does not understand this. And the rest of my biological family and everything else, who knows? I just don't have that physical allergy. Sometimes I almost wish I did. Now I don't. Because I want something tangible I can hold. I want a button I could press. I want something that could make me feel better and make me feel okay. I don't have that. Instead, I've got Amazon, I've got nagging my husband, I've got controlling, withdrawing, all these different things that I do instead. I am powerless over people, places, situations in my life. I'm powerless over my immediate reactions and feelings. I'm powerless over my past, my history. But I'm not powerless over my choices today, and I'm not powerless over over the connections that I can build and sustain and nurture and the person that I can become in the future. Al-Anon I don't know why I keep coming back. I keep coming back because there's a part of me that knows that this is the truth, that this is the healthy future that can be there for me, a fulfilling, whole, healthy, happy future, happy, joyous, and free. Al-Anon has a whole bunch of slogans. AA, I know, only has a couple. For us, there's a couple that stood out to me. And usually this kind of stuff is like, one of my things about Al-Anon and 12-step in general is like, I don't want to be that person with like the hashtag blessed thing on my wall. Like, no, thank you. That's not my jam. And yet, all that Hallmark stuff actually, like some of it actually is like real. So who knew? And slogans, they're bite-sized, they're silly, and I remember them when I am in total panic, chaos, or losing my mind. Because losing my mind doesn't take something big, it takes something really tiny, like, you know, being late to work, again. Like, all these different things. And so there are a couple slogans that I have used in my recovery that have been incredibly helpful. One is first things first. Because I will start thinking about the next, and the next, and the next, and the next. I'm worrying about, you know, what's happening 5 yards on the line. I'm worried about this. I'm worried about this talk in the morning when I still don't know what I'm going to be wearing for the day, which is why I'm late out the door. No, first things first. Slow down. Take it easy. Just start here. And that helps at work. I've got all these things. Oh, I want to do this little nitpicky thing that's really fun. Sarah, you've got an annual report to finish. Okay, fine. First things first. And then the other one is progress, not perfection. Because I don't think I'm a perfectionist, you know, like I'm a solid B student, 3.3 average from high school to, you know, college, grad, all of that, solid B. I'm like a person, I'm well-rounded, My perfectionism comes in those nitpicky things where I've got an idea of what I want it to be. I've got to make it perfect. I've got to do exactly what I think it should be. And I spent hours and hours and hours doing this thing that is not the first things first. It's not what I need to be doing. And that tears my life apart. It does it over and over again with my job. It does it with my family. It does it with all the things in my life. And so progress, not perfection, for me is also this reminder of how I treat this program and how I engage with this program, because I will beat myself up over and over again for not doing what my sponsor tells me. I should do what my sponsor tells me, like, hello. But my answer for my entire life has been that I am not doing the right thing, so I'm out. I didn't get it right the first time. It doesn't come naturally to me. I'm out. I'll quit. No big deal. I will find a way to make it seem like, I didn't quit. I just da-da-da-da-da. Bullshit. All of it. Keep coming back. Messy. Uneven. I'm praying for the willingness to be willing. It's that in between. And that's the place where I find such growth and such power. 5-something. And it's liberating to be able to do that. It's liberating to realize that I'm not perfect, I'm never going to be perfect, and I can keep growing and trying anyway, instead of just totally rejecting and discarding and trying to force my will in things, just letting the growth happen around me and through me if I just keep doing the work. And doing the work for sometimes is not doing what my sponsor says. Doing the work is showing up. It's being of service. It's being messy and sharing that with people. It's being vulnerable and real for the first time ever in my life. Actually being real. And it progress, not perfection, is that, people say, oh, practice makes perfect. No, I say practice makes progress. When you do the work, when you do the steps, when you just keep coming back, when you fumble and mess up, that's practicing something. That's the only way you can learn an instrument or learn how to be good at something, is to practice it. That's, people always say that. But practice makes perfect is complete horseshit, because we're human and we will never be perfect. But practice makes progress. And I'm seeking progress, not perfection. And that growth, that spiritual alchemy that Arisa talks about, I've already experienced it within myself. I've witnessed it in people in the program, and I've witnessed it in my husband. I have reached for solutions my entire life that don't work. It's not the bottle, just, again, by the grace of God. I've reached for control and fear and hiding and withdrawal and Netflix and you name it, ice cream, and none of it works. What works is showing up. First of all, showing up for myself, in a real way, because I've never done that and I'm still learning how to do that. Showing up for the God within me, that God consciousness that speaks from a deeper part of my soul, to bring that to the world. And showing up for all of you and for my life in an authentic, real, and honest way. And that is a gift of this program, that I just keep coming back day after day, and I do the first things first, the next right thing. And I have faith in progress and not perfection in this program. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you so much, Sarah. I appreciate that. And now, Jane.
Hi, my name is Jane, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. And please, if I get away from the mic and you can't hear me, raise your hand or something and wave. Hi. I'm feeling really saturated from today. I don't know how you guys are doing, but I think you're all warriors to still be here in your seats and listening, and I want to thank you for keeping us company. It's been an amazing day, and I've heard some things that I'll add to my ever-growing document of important things I've heard at meetings. I think how I would begin is to say, I hope I've said I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I am the granddaughter of a self-admitted alcoholic. I am the mother of 2 self-admitted alcoholics. I am the sister of a self-admitted alcoholic. And I have a number of other relatives who may well be alcoholic, but they don't call themselves that, so I don't either. But I didn't know that I had any of these. I didn't know about any of them really until about 13 years ago. I didn't know there was any alcoholism in my family at all. I got to move this a little bit. Okay. I was not a happy camper. I was a person who had a lot of resentments and a lot of blame for other people and a lot of complaints. I didn't know that I had grown up with the effects of untreated alcoholism in my family. Didn't know anything about it. Didn't know anything about alcoholism. Didn't know about Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, anything. When my oldest son reached sort of the late high school, it was pretty evident that he was circling the drain, and with a heroin addiction that continued into his early 20s. And I thought, I live in Dorchester, I held this so much inside that I really thought I was like one of the only mothers in Dorchester with a kid with a heroin problem, which is now so utterly absurd, right? That's how ignorant I was. I was deeply, deeply ignorant. I hid this from friends, and I was ashamed. I tried to be a good kid. I tried to do all the right things. How was this happening to me that I had a kid who was addicted? I was very, very focused on my own pain around this. And I ran into a friend in a parking lot one time, and I consider this maybe one of a very big higher power moment. I sort of spilled the whole story to her one of the first times that I did. And she said to me, "You know, I go to Al-Anon for a similar problem, and I'd be glad to pick you up and take you to an Al-Anon meeting with me." That was in 2007, and I knew as soon as I walked into Al-Anon that I really was in a place where I wanted to be. I felt that there were people around me who had a level of, well, I wanted what they had. I wasn't sure what they had, but it was people were grounded and smiling and supportive of one another. And I really had never experienced the type of communication that was happening there. So I stayed, and I learned about alcoholism and addiction in a way that I hadn't known before. I learned it was an illness. Larsine mentioned earlier, I went to a lot of open AA meetings, and that was really, really valuable for me because I got a perspective on the alcoholic's experience. So that when my son bottomed out a couple of years after I started in Al-Anon, I was able to, I was a different person than I had been before. I was obsessed with controlling his usage. I was obsessed with making sure that he not use, and that if I just could say the right thing to him, find the right book for him, book him an appointment with the right program or the right therapist, that he'd be okay. None of those things worked. But what I was able to learn in Al-Anon was that as we've the three C's, didn't cause it, can't cure it, can't, oh, what's the other one?
Control
it. Oh, yeah, I never get them in the right order. But, and I was able to set some boundaries and step back in a way that I wasn't even aware I was doing. It was just sort of coming to me because of a kind of an osmosis. So my second higher power moment I'm going to tell you about was when he had gone into a detox, and we were sitting and talking with his social worker and his psychiatrist about next steps, and he was saying, "I don't want to do a program, I just want to go home," meaning to our house. And I knew I couldn't have him home again. I knew it. I knew I could not have him in the house, and I didn't know how to say to my kid, "I can't have you in the house." And the social worker said, you know, I know of a program, it's in New Hampshire, and she described it, and he had shot everything down. No, I'm not doing that. No, I'm not doing that. And he was of age, you know, he didn't have to do anything. And finally, there was this long, long pause after she told him about the place in New Hampshire. Long pause, and I felt God come into the room in that pause. And he said, I could try that. And it was the realization I had in that moment was that the solution wasn't going to come from me, that someone else was going to put my son's hand into the hand of God and the hand of recovery. Since then, there have been, you know, I can't remember exactly how my sponsor put it to me, but like there, it's like just when you think you've identified all the alcoholics in the family, another one pops up. And we've had some surprises, and they've each surprise has been heart-wrenching for all of us. And I won't say that Al-Anon has made my experience as loving an alcoholic less heart-wrenching, but it has helped me from making it worse by making it about me. I can take care, I can allow others to have their own experience and their own pain, my loved ones, and at least better than I could before, and I can try to attend to my own pain as well. But I do have a problem with obsessive thinking. Obsessive thinking about others is what got me into Al-Anon, and it's one of the reasons that I will never leave, because I will continue to obsess about, is he getting to enough meetings? Is he called his sponsor? You know, he sounds a little on edge. I wonder what that means. And I'll spin out about that to an unhealthy degree. And that's on me. That's mine to work with my higher power and my sponsor and my work of the steps to address that in my own life, that obsession. So I just want to, I'll talk a little bit about the slogan that means a lot to me is how important is it? And what I have here is how Al-Anon works. Oops. And if anybody doesn't know this book, I consider it sort of the big book of Al-Anon, and it's a great read. It's just a beautiful book. How important is it in here? I'll just read a paragraph of what they have to say. The slogan helps us gain perspective. My perspective is all shot, you know, from growing up with alcohol, the effects of alcoholism in the family. If we take the time to think about what really matters to us, we may include such concerns as health, serenity, adequate food and shelter, and loving support from others. Each of us is free to determine for ourselves what is truly of value, but most of us agree that we often get upset about matters of little consequence. Compared to whether or not we will have enough to eat today, how important is it if we overcook the chicken? Is forgetting to pick up a newspaper worth the cost of our serenity? What price are we willing to pay to win an argument or prove that other people that we are right? How important is it if a call we have been expecting doesn't come through, or if a loved one makes a choice we don't like? Does a partner's unkind word in the morning merit a whole day of misery, obsession, and hostility? Does it even merit 5 minutes of unhappiness? Does it really matter? Must we take it personally? That is one part of how important is it, is not to blow things out of proportion. And I do blow a lot of things out of proportion and make them bigger than they are. But I have another application of how important is it in my life that goes in the other direction. And that is that I minimize things that are truly important and that have to do with me. So I can spend so much time running from myself about something that really is truly of spiritual importance to me. I have very organized spices on my spice rack. I have My underwear drawer is pretty organized too. I got a lot of, you know, I really take care of the little details. And I often wonder, where am I? Like, what's next? And sitting down to address prayer and meditation in a meaningful way is a lot harder for me than organizing, you name it, the game drawer or whatever. And in that sense, how important is it? Is a matter of balance. There are things that I minimize that are very important. There are things that I blow out of proportion that are less important. And I think that the effect of alcoholism in my life and my world has had a lot to do with this being out of balance, being out of whack, losing perspective. So I just wanted to add too, there was someone who had a question yesterday. At the evening meeting, and I don't know if they're here now, but somebody asked a question about, they said that they were in AA and they wondered how they could know if Al-Anon was relevant for them, or if they, how to approach looking into Al-Anon. And I would say, when I heard that question, my first thought was, I don't know too many alcoholics who don't know a lot of alcoholics. Like, alcoholics live in a world of alcoholics, friends, family, and I know people in both programs who started in one program and who realized they needed the other program. That's a very common thing. And I say, we listen to our hearts and we see what we can learn about how the available wisdom can apply to our lives. So if you're interested in how Al-Anon could be helpful to you, this book is a great place to start. And I know a lot of people are very attached to Zoom meetings. I have had a hard time with Zoom meetings myself, and I'm trying to find more in-person meetings, but Zoom is a good vehicle for a lot of people I know too. So I think that's it. The other slogan that I rely on regularly is easy does it, because I don't go easy. That's not me. When the fog clears, that's one of the first slogans that come to mind. So that's it for me. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Jane. I think these are yours. Okay. Wonderful. What great speakers. So thank you so much. So now, Kate, would you come down? Kate's been drafted. So, okay, where are we? We're opening the floor now for sharing. Shares will be up to 3 minutes. And Emily, would you stand up again just so that everybody keeps their eye on you? Emily, would you let them know maybe at 2 minutes and then...
I was thinking, like, I could hang out up here.
Perfect.
And then I'll, like, start raising my hand at 2 minutes and then...
And then you'll get the...
I'll yell in dulcet tones, gentle time.
Wonderful. That's wonderful. And... Do I have this on? I do. So Kate is going to be the game show person. And if you raise your... Sorry?
I'm not talking to the mic.
That's very true. I almost... at work, they almost never say, you know, Nancy, we can't hear you very well. It's almost always, okay, calm down. So what we'll do is raise your hand. I will call on you. I'll ask you to go to the end of your row. And Kate will be darting around like a deer, bringing you the mic. We'd like to keep the topic on Al-Anon and how other people's alcoholism affects you. And we ask that you observe group conscience and refrain from crosstalk, which is typically considered to be questioning or interrupting the person who is currently speaking, giving direct advice to others who have already shared, speaking directly to or about another by name instead of the group as a whole, or telling another person how to think. Sorry. So please speak with an I perspective. All right? Have at it, please. We'd love to hear from you. Or talk about a slogan, as Jane nicely reminded me. We've got two people over there. What? Not very good at this. Thank you.
Hi, my name's that's loud, sorry. My name's Emily. Thank you both, sir, or all of you, for your service. It was really great to hear you. And it was a good reminder that I'm powerless over situations. And, you know, I have experience of dating someone who struggled on and off, and he ended up passing away. So I think that, like, I can forget that I need this program, even though I'm not actively involved with, right? Because, like, my father got sober, and it's like I need to be reminded that it doesn't matter if he's drinking or not, and it's people in my life who don't use alcohol that I'm also powerless over, that I still want to, like, try and control and manage. So both of your shares were really helpful to remind me that there's so much stuff that I can learn here that I can apply, and I actually have that book. I've had it for probably a year. I've read a little bit, but, like, you know, I need to, like, open it, you know, and use it. But yeah, I really appreciate you guys sharing your experience, and I'm looking forward to hearing everyone else, and especially Bobby.
Thank you.
I'm a grateful. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon, and I really want to. Slogan topic is probably one of my favorites. I like when I lead a discussion group, I'll say, you know, slogans, are they lifesavers or, you know, joy killers? You know, is it, you know, something greater? Is it a meeting shrapnel? But for me, it, you know, when I first started hearing the slogans, you know, it wasn't deep enough for me. I wanted to get into something really meaty and juicy and, you know, scientific and like the, you know, something from MIT or something. But now I live in the slogans, and I make up slogans, you know. But one thing that I like to do, I mean, I'll use the slogans on, like, on a spot, but what I've been doing since when I went to Nashville, and it just came to me, I was at an Al-Anon meeting there, and we were talking about slogans. And I said, you know, I like to do it, you know, pick a slogan and live with it for a whole month. And, you know, it really helps because, like, the slogan, you know, how important is it? I mean, that's ingrained, you know, and then weight. And I get to, that's a good one. I use that at work with people that, well, they know I'm, like, you know, in everything now. But I say, you know, weight. And they said, weight on what? And I said, you know, it's like, I say, why am I talking? You know, they say, oh, are you saying that I'm talking too much? And I said, well, I didn't say that. You know, but that and, you know, I have somebody, but sometimes I have to remember, you know, how important is it? That sometimes it is important. And, you know, a friend says, you know, that their cat got lost. That's important to them. So thanks. And I love the slogans now.
Thanks, Bobby.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tina.
Hi, Tina.
I am a grateful alcoholic, and I do qualify as an Al-Anonic. I don't know. I just make up stuff. I just wanted to say thank you. I appreciate everything that you shared. I come from a family of alcoholism and the other isms, right, that we all have. And my son's currently in active alcoholism. My father has 15 years of sobriety. You know, my relationship of 24 years recently ended. I was the alcoholic. My significant other wasn't. And the things that you shared from your perspectives today have really helped me be able to look at it from a different angle and on a different side from another person's point of view, from the outside looking in at what I was doing, you know, through all of my drinking and even when I'm just thinking, right? So I just really wanted to say thank you, and I appreciate it. And I'm definitely going to look into that book. So thank you.
Wonderful.
Hello, my name is Chrissy, and I'm an alcoholic. I also attend Al-Anon and OA and SLAA and, as my friend says, a lot of other isms. For me, my favorite part of Al-Anon is the detachment pamphlet brochure that you get at these wonderful meetings. And I wanted to just list, I reference it when I'm at work because I am a personal shopper, which sounds like a fluffy job, but I have a lot of demanding clients and I'm extremely sensitive. And interestingly enough, a lot of the ones that can really hurt me are active in their addiction. And I seem to be attracted to them and they to me, and then let them become my higher power. And I'm learning that's on me through this program. So just to read what it says, and I'm happy to share this with anybody who would like it. In Al-Anon, we learn not to suffer because of the actions or reactions of other people, not to allow ourselves to be used or abused by others in the interest of another's recovery, not to do for others what they can do for themselves, not to manipulate situations so others will eat, go to bed, get up, pay bills, not drink, or behave as we see fit, not to cover up for another's mistakes or misdeeds, not to create a crisis, not to prevent a crisis, if that is the natural course of events. I lived my life trying to prevent other people's crises. So what a relief it is to know that that's actually not my responsibility, and I don't have that kind of power. And I've learned not to get in the way of anyone's bottom, because that's actually harmful rather than helpful. Thanks.
Thank you. And just so everybody knows, we do have pamphlets here, and we also, I believe, still have books out at a table outside. Is that right, Jane? So they're still there, so we've got a table there for anybody who might be interested in the book that Jane mentioned. Just saying. Okay, no, we don't have that one.
Hi, friends. Bridget, alcoholic, Al-Anonic. I really appreciated the share. I'm sorry, I'm trying to talk, but I think I'm coming to, I love that Al-Anon reminds me the other part of step one, which is like, I'm powerless over people. And I, part of me is trying not to be embarrassed that I'm getting that almost in year three of my recovery. I was trying to listen to you. My mind was just like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to control this way so that they can validate me or they can see me or, you know. And I'm obviously, well, not obviously because you don't know my life, but I come from a family that is like deeply, deeply dysfunctional. But then I also have this tendency to attract people that are also deeply, deeply dysfunctional, and I go on this spree of trying to save them or get them to validate me or audition for their love or audition for their, and I started going to Al-Anon in December when I was at this like really, really low bottom where so much was happening in my life. And listening to one of the speakers, I don't remember which, I think the second speaker, when you were reminding about the three C's, I didn't cause it. I get so bent out of shape trying to fix things I didn't cause. And then I'm trying to figure out what the fuck is going on? Why is it not working? So I appreciated that reminder. Sorry, let me put my glasses on. What, did you say 1 minute? Yeah. I appreciated the reminder about, you know, even like detaching. And Thank you so much for reading the person who shared before me, because I got those pamphlets yesterday and I was just like, I'm going to put this down for my mom. And now I'm just like, maybe I should go read it, because I'm trying to like be in Al-Anon, but not do the work. But anyways, I just had to share because my mind was busy. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Jane would like to double dip.
Thanks, Kate. I just wanted to say, I wrote something on my hand that Larsine said. This is really, like, from the Al-Anon perspective, watching someone with this disease is incredibly heartbreaking. Like, no matter what, no matter how you take care of yourself, no matter how you keep the focus on yourself, it's heartbreaking to watch somebody struggle with alcoholism or addiction. But Larsine said something that I will keep. I would rather have a broken heart than a closed one. Mm. And, you know, having a broken heart maybe is not the worst thing in the world. It's an honest response to a very difficult situation, and anybody who's in Al-Anon is living with a difficult situation, even if they don't have active alcoholism in their lives. It's the response that we have, the internal response we've developed over time. So I just wanted to share that quote.
Hi, I'm Zoe, and I'm recovering in the 12 steps of AA, and I came in to Al-Anon years and years and years ago, and I stayed with Al-Anon for a long, long time, and I really liked what Sarah shared about, like, the progress, not perfection, and letting the growth be. I was just thinking that because... you know, I think that I just have had a lot of growth, but yet I could see sometimes how, like, you know, there's like a slippery slope, you know, and I catch myself and go, here we go again. Stop. You gotta stop, you know. Where I was trying to help somebody, and I guess helping prevent their bottom, right? Thinking I could fix it, and I'm familiar with that, and I notice that when I set my boundary, they bite back, you know, and so when this person responded, what I thought was kind of like, keep your hands off or something, you know, which was, you don't have to douche, you know, and I was like, yeah, I guess you're right, you know, like, I don't have to, like, get involved in preventing their bottom, you know, and back off, and, but I did have a boundary where they were like, well, why don't you just come over here and give me the money? Thank you. Why don't you just come over here and give me the money, you know? And that was like a red flag for me, because I was like, I'm sorry, I don't do 12-step calls alone, you know? And when they said, you know, you don't have to do shit, I just said, I'm sorry, I can't help you, you know? Because I realized then that it's like, yeah, I am getting myself involved in somebody else's stuff and I need to back off. So it's growth, and I'm gonna accept that as growth. And, you know, just knowing that I can stop in the middle of it. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Marianne, and I was just thinking about, as people were talking and thinking about the slogans, that, like, if anybody's intimidated by the steps, The slogans are fairly accessible, and by doing or applying the slogans, I'm kind of inherently like working steps. Like it's sort of a bite-sized version. Like even to just take it a day at a time, I'm turning over the past, I'm turning over the future. You know, it's got a little step three flavor to it. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that because I know for me, reading the steps was really intimidating. And I was like, maybe you people are gonna do that, but like, I'm just gonna listen and I don't know, get a little relief. And the slogans just felt more accessible. So anyway, think of them like an AP course in high school.
Hi, I'm Caroline.
Hi, Caroline.
This isn't actually a slogan, but one of the things my sponsor says a lot is there are no big deals, because I will get worked up about, I think it was said, right? Like I take the smallest thing and make it a big fucking ordeal, or I take something that really matters and I completely minimize it. So one of the things that happens, and I think over time it's helped me to do a little bit of my own like 10, 11 step before I pick up the phone or do a little time with a higher power before I pick up the phone, is that idea that there are no big deals. Like another sponsor would ask me if I was being chased by a bear, you know, like that's where I go immediately. I'm like wound up. I also get sponsees that react in the exact same way. And I ask them if they're getting chased by a bear. But one of the things is like, when I came into Al-Anon, I thought my qualifier was like, it's my grandmother. And my uncles, now that I know, there's more people, but my grandmother was the person I knew the most, and that I was actually kind of raised partially by her when I was a kid. But it's amazing the time in program and in AA of like seeing the layers and layers of our family, and especially my mom, because she was the first of five of an alcoholic mother, you know? So all of the ways that we related were very alcoholic, even though, you know, and I was not, I mean, I was a kid, I wasn't an alcoholic yet, and I was probably in my brain, but I wasn't like behaving and drinking that way. But I think, you know, it's just really nice in an Al-Anon setting to see like, to get rid of the idea of what is normal and just start to be like, where, like, what is actually happening? Like, where are my feet right now? Like just taking one thing at a time. But yeah, the amount of like, patience and, compassion that I had came from working steps in Al-Anon. You know, it was just like a totally different, it's not like a get into action, do the next thing. You know, it's like, okay, just for me, it was a lot about sitting still, sitting on my hands. And yeah, it's a lot easier to clean up a mess if you don't get involved in the first place. So thanks.
Where you just were. Thanks so much for sharing your experience, strength, and hope, ladies. Sarah, I think I sat in front of you last year at the Freedom Conference, maybe, and you told me about Al-Anon. And thank you for that. And I checked out some, did I say Therese Alcoholic? Yeah, that's my name. Okay, and I'm an alcoholic. And I had checked out some online Al-Anon meetings, and They were definitely interesting, and I feel like I got something out of them. I guess this is a question. Are we allowed to ask questions? So my question is, if your qualifier is questionably an alcoholic, like maybe in your opinion is one, in their opinion is not, and is just a heavy drinker, is Al-Anon a program that would be helpful in that situation, or is that... Yes. Okay. And I know obviously that's not where you'd go to find out the difference between those two things. It's in the big book. But I'm just curious because I wasn't sure about working the steps in Al-Anon because I've already done it in an AA and I thought it would be redundant, but would just like to hear any feedback you have about, you know, the upside of doing that.
I always feel like it's kind of hard to live in this country and certainly in an urban environment and not to know alcoholics, you know, not to have somebody whose life affects you. And, you know, we like to say maybe they're an alcoholic or maybe their drinking just bothers you. Right. Yep.
I'll be out of the way. I have alcoholic tendencies. No, never mind. That's a whole nother story. Yes, absolutely. Because the thing is, the focus is on ourselves, right? It's not about what another person says or does, really, their definition. Their drinking bothers me, period. And really, the family disease of alcoholism, however it manifests, bothers me. You know, my father is not an alcoholic, but oh my God, the family disease in him is it's a whole thing. And that's, you know, the more I work the program, the more I see how I need to apply it in my life and with different relationships and with people. And like a good Al-Anon, I have, of course, diagnosed my husband thoroughly that he should be going to Al-Anon. Bless his heart for tolerating me. But he, I've thought about this. And the thing is, like, I think about it because I'm not a double winner or twice blessed. I'm not an alcoholic. But I feel like the alcoholism, like AA to me, it seems like that is helpful for dealing with the ism that you carry within you that you're afflicted with. And Al-Anonism and Al-Anon would be helpful for dealing with the isms that everybody else has and you dealing with those relationships with other people. But again, I'm just talking out of my, so that's just my thoughts on that though.
So just in the same way that sometimes people come to AA, I think we've run out of time, but thank you, and catch alcoholism from us. I think it's quite possible many of us came into Al-Anon pretty sure that we did not have alcoholism in the family and that we did not need it, and yet things were not going well. Okay. In closing, I would like to say thank you, everybody, and thanks for your cooperation and flexibility, and thanks, Kate, for being voluntold, and I just appreciate everybody. And thank you to our speakers, Sarah and Jerry.